Hey, kids. You're listening to the internet's wettest podcast about video games, consoles, and pancakes. The SML Podcast.
What's up, everybody? This is the SML Podcast. I am your host, Joe. We have another party cast lined up for you. A lot of people going to be dropping by, chatting, starting things off. We got Purnell and Chris here. How are you two doing?
I'm
good.
Broke.
God, Joe, turn your volume down.
Shut up. Listen, Dick. Is it really too loud?
No.
Oh, you're just fine. Fucking with me. Oh, why you? Why I oughta? So, how are you guys doing?
Broke, but good.
Broke, but yeah, good.
Same. I didn't realize I was going to be spending my life savings on Nintendo 64 this week.
Oh, geez. Did you? Did you upgrade?
Yeah, and I buckled. Was it buckled, knuckled down, something? I caved and bought the N64 controller too.
Oh,
do you have an official one or something? Like an official?
Yeah.
I can't imagine some of those games working on a normal controller, because that Z triggering thing was kind of laid out for that style of controller. But
I'm actually doing really good with it so far, using just my the controllers I have. Of course, I don't have the N64 controller yet, but Mario Kart's sure working well.
I heard Mario Kart had like input lag and it was really tough to play.
I just want to say that like I complain about the idea, like I don't think I want to spend the money on getting the upgrade, but then as you heard earlier, I already spent that much money on a cheesesteak today, so it's like, ugh. If I wanted to, I could have had a year's worth of emulation, but I had a cheesesteak.
I'm debating if I want to upgrade, because it's me, Ashley, and our old buddy Chris Huber all on the same plan, and it's $35 a year for the family plan, which isn't bad, but now it's going to be $80 for the expansion pack.
Yeah.
I thought a portion of that was like Animal Crossing, which means there's no version of it that doesn't include
the Animal Crossing. No, it comes with Animal Crossing is just included.
You can purchase Animal Crossing separately.
But it doesn't make the expansion pass cheaper.
Yeah.
Oh, that's weak sauce.
Yeah.
I thought that was how the cost went up, was because of Animal Crossing.
Yeah, but it's not optional.
It's like, you bet you like Animal Crossing, you better.
Yeah.
We know you got Animal Crossing.
To be fair, we all do have Animal Crossing.
Sold this copy, yet when I transferred my Switch data over, a friend of mine like posted on my wall, he's like, don't forget your Animal, because he, like you guys, he assumed I had it. He's like, don't forget your Animal Crossing island. I'm like, I already sold it, I don't have it anymore. But then I was like, but what if I get it back? I'm going, what island? So I still transferred the island over, just in case.
There you go. Yeah, I really don't think I could drop the money on that expansion pass unless I get like a bunch of other people in my family plan.
Yeah, I can at least say that like the input lag is not noticeable. It's Nintendo 64, you know, like they kind of, the whole like idea of it is that they made these games kind of jank so that the weird ass controls would work.
True.
You know, like, unless you're a speedrunner, which in which case, what are you doing playing it on Switch anyway? So I think that every time a Nintendo 64 thing happens, whether it hits an eShop or like, you know, if there was a mini console that ever came out, or like when it hits Switch, like that just always brings this like new generation of gamers who like don't realize that Nintendo 64 has been hated on ever since the first day of like 1996. It's like, you can't tell us anything new about the ways in which Nintendo 64 isn't working right.
No.
Just embrace the diversity of problems. You know, back in 97 or whatever, if you wanted to save a game of Hexen, it took all but three blocks of a standard memory card, memory pack. if y'all don't remember that.
Memory card. I remember when the GameCube came out and there was, an NBA game that required more space than they had available on memory cards. Yeah, and they didn't have any third-party memory cards out yet, so you just couldn't play the fucking game until a third-party card came out.
That happened?
Yeah.
I did not know that shit.
Yeah.
Were people still buying it?
Yeah.
What were they doing? Just taking it home and putting it on the shelf?
I don't know what the hell they were doing. I know it took a few weeks for third-party memory cards to come out. At least I don't remember there being any third-party ones at launch that had more than the official Nintendo one did. But it's been so long that I might just be forgetting. Then again, I remember that fucking KB Toys made me pay $30 extra on Black Friday just because they could to buy GameCube. Hey,
KB Toys was a virtuous establishment. I'll have you know, we were good company. Damn it! I kid. I don't
miss it.
That was the era. Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
I was going to say, it was like I used to work there, and it was I admit they had some shitty practices, and like the whole forced batteries bit. Like, ugh, hated asking people if they wanted batteries with their chewing gum. You had to do it. It was a requirement. You could get fired for not doing so. It was bullshit.
Oh yeah, I remember that era of retail.
We got fire engines blazing by my house now. Yay!
Better the fire engine than the fire, right?
I told you there was a fire alarm earlier. That's how my town is.
They're responding to a noise complaint about your microphone.
Jesus Christ!
Fuck you!
That's our Chris. Oh, never misses a beat.
Oh man.
So yeah, how is the expansion pack? Like, is the game lineup all right? Is like, what's there so far? Is it worth the extra money?
Let me close the game I'm supposed to review and look at it. Because I don't remember. It's like it's Dr. Mario 64. Ocarina of Time, Mario Kart 64, Mario Tennis, Sin and Punishment, Star Fox 64, Super Mario 64, Winback Combat Operations, and Yoshi's Story is the biggest box.
Oh, I think it, asshole! That game,
because it has its own it has its own row, so it's like it's that weird way that they kind of
fancy,
yeah.
That damn Yoshi song. That's how I've always heard it growing up. It was like, you asshole. And it never went away. Never went away.
Nice. Now I'm going to have to get the expansion pass just to hear Yoshi say asshole.
And if you're lucky, you'll run into that problem that all these Redditors are running into where it'll be slowed down because the emulation is slow.
Oh, no.
Some people are posted images of Mario going it's a me, Mario. Hello.
Mama's hooting me in.
I was not lucky. They're all performing perfectly for me, so I have not had an issue like that.
So you ever run into these issues that all these web articles are writing about? Because I haven't opened them up, but I get Google alerts as far as news articles, and they're all Nintendo Switch Online is a buggy mess.
Yeah, I know. It's like... Again, I'm like, well, welcome to Nintendo 64, but I haven't opened up Ocarina of Time, which some people are reporting the most input lag there. So, but again, it's Ocarina of Time. Like, how are you supposed to control it under normal circumstances? Plus, I mean, it's the best game ever made. Please don't write letters.
I'm excited about Dr. Mario 64. That's a cool one. I will say there's more games than I expected there to be at launch, because let's remember the N64 at launch had two games.
Yes.
Yep. The thing about it worked in Nintendo's favor, because when they slowly trickled out, people were buying games they otherwise didn't give two shits about. I would know, because I bought three of them.
Which ones?
Star Wars Shadows of the Empire, because I don't like Star Wars, but I still bought that game. I bought Cruising USA, despite really not caring about Cruising USA. And this might be a little dicier. I'm having trouble remembering what the third one was, but I almost wanted to say it was like, no, I love Glover. You take it back. Like, I bought FIFA.
Blues Brothers 2000.
Was that a game on there?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, God. Like, I want to include FIFA because that definitely falls under the game that I otherwise wouldn't have bought. But that came out like at the beginning of the following year, like the beginning of 97. So that's harder to say. But I still kind of count that as the third game. But I was, if I went up there and looked at my library of games, I'm like, I have a couple where it was like, why did you buy this? I don't know. I needed something for the fucker. I needed something to play on it. Oh, you beat Mario 64 so many times. Goes back to the last play of the game multiple times.
I think I got 120 stars in Mario 64 before I owned a third game.
Oh, Jesus.
Actually, that was the one game where I played it to the point where if you told me any different, I could have had 120 stars at the fucking store. Because I would just go into the store after school and just play the demo. Like, I was obsessed with playing the game that I didn't even own yet, because it wasn't out yet.
That demo was a holy place, man.
Yes, it was. Like,
for our generation.
It was amazing, like, because the thing that's amazing that really blows my mind that people really fucking take for granted, and I know my memory isn't off on this, Mario 64 was legitimately the first full-on 3D platformer. People love to say Crash Bandicoot, but fuck that. That game was not
an auto runner.
Yeah, it was like you can go forward or backwards or left and right. It was not Mario fucking 64. Mario 64 was a goddamn phenomenon.
Crash Bandicoot was rodent Star Wars. It was just going through that Death Star tunnel.
Over and over again, the Death Star chasing you.
Exactly.
Like, I can't believe how many fucking fire engines are going by my house tonight. Like, what the fuck is going on in my town tonight?
Mario 64 party.
Yeah, Mario 64 Damn. Party.
Set the house on fire, going for them stars. But like, yeah, but literally... Like, I would get home, I would get out of school, I would get on the bus, like public transportation, take it to Toys R Us, and just play that fucking game until they closed. And then my mom would have to come get me and take me home. Like, I was obsessed with that game, despite not owning it, because I couldn't buy it yet, because it wasn't out yet. But that was the full cart. That was the full game they had at the store. It wasn't a demo cart. It was the full game. So if you had all the time in the world, you could theoretically beat Mario 64 at the store.
Jeez.
Before the game came out. And I sure enough, beforehand, but as far as I got to like the second set of levels, I know that much. Which when you lay it on the table, that's still a lot of play for a demo game.
That is.
But I loved it. I was like, I just like doing the thing where you just like constantly do backflips with Mario, because like he could do like the triple flip. He could do the side flips. He had a bunch of moves that had no fucking purpose. It was just Mario could do it now. Like the handstand on top of a pole. He didn't really need to do that at the time. It was like maybe 2 stars that needed it. Other than that, it was just like, why are you doing it? Because Mario can do it. It's fun. He has a bunch of crazy moves. A fucking side flip. What are you doing that for? Nothing. You don't need that. You'll never use it in game for any actual purpose. But it's just cool to make Mario do a side flip.
It took me like so long to like get used to using it that I just forced myself to use it all the time, and now I'm like really good at it.
It's so fun. And didn't he have a backflip too? He had a backflip.
Oh yeah. He
was a freaking acrobat. That fucker ate all that lasagna and was still busting it out. Had no problems. It was amazing.
Oh,
you
spaghetti.
Talk to people in the present, you're like, you tell people in the present now about how big of a deal that game was. You're like, that game is stupid. Look at it. Look all blocky and shit. I'm like, you are a fucking moron. You don't know anything. But that same person was like, Final Fantasy VII was a revolution. I mean, admittedly, it was for the time as well. To acknowledge one and not the fucking other is like, what are you, drunk?
Yeah, people have weird memories of the 90s that they didn't experience.
I played Berenstain Bears.
Wait, oh, what? Geez.
Whoa, wait,
what? What happened?
Are we getting into some Mandela effect shit tonight?
I played Super Luigi Brothers. Where did you play?
I played Super Gianna Sisters.
Oh, God.
People are like, I don't believe you. No, really, it's Mario with girls. And they're like, no, that doesn't exist.
That's the Back to the Future shit, like in a parallel world where the Gianna Sisters were produced by Mario, by Nintendo. Like, not. Is that who is? Yeah, baby! The long jump.
And in other news, the Genesis came out too. Anyway,
the Genesis 2.
Did you play anything on the Genesis?
I played Musha Aleste because I really wanted to play a $300 game on the Genesis.
Wait, rewind. Musha, the shooter with the robot was $300. Yeah. I played at Salvation Army.
Hang on, let me do my thing where I look up eBay while we're recording the show.
The worst part.
Why not? What else are we doing? Right.
That's the worst part. It's going up.
Right on the money. $310. Buy it now. Authentic cart.
Nice.
Cart
only. The worst part is, I bet the Salvation Army actually threw their copy in the trash.
Probably.
Yeah. That much money. Oh my god.
Yeah. So it's on the Genesis set, and that's great. I also. A friend of mine started a game of Shining Force, but it crashed on her. I was like, I haven't crashed Shining Force in 30 years of playing it, so I guess there must be an issue there, too.
Jeez.
Get that collection. I actually got to put the Sega CD one on this darn emulator so I can finally play it. But I just got to upset it, like download it and all that, but then I need to play games because I got teased by a friend today. And he's like, you haven't even beaten Dragon Quest XI. I was like, I haven't. I've been sidetracked. He's like, how have you been sidetracked? I'm like, you don't want to play. He's like, bitch, do you know how many games I've played? Don't you fucking tell me what I want to play.
Motherfucker, I review shit. I don't have time to play games.
And even when I do play them, it's like, I want to play like 55 different games. It's reasonable to accept that 52 of them are going to fall through the goddamn crack.
I mean, I will say it's slightly embarrassing that I beat Waifu Discovered 2 before beating Dragon Quest 11, but...
Why is that embarrassing?
This is the reality. This is the reality in which we find ourselves.
No! Dragon Quest 11 is fucking long! If Waifu Discovered was 100 hours or 70 hours, I would look at you funny, because there's only 8 girls in the fucking game.
Hey, maybe it was 100 hours. Chris may have spent 100 hours playing Waifu Discovered 2.
I haven't turned it off since I got it.
Nothing but titties.
I ended up buying that, honestly. Like, I didn't get it for review, but I was like, I liked the first one after reviewing it. I'm going to just buy the sequel. There's no shame in my game. Shit.
Yeah, it's better, isn't it?
Yeah. Like, they literally went out of their way and improved the game. Like, if you're going to have a Rogue content, I'm probably missaying it. I don't give a shit. If you're going to have that content, that's how you do it. You actually put a good game around it. That way you'll have people like, you know, I just want to play the game. And you'll get the whole people's like, I read it for the magazine. He's like, no, I actually do. The boobies are a bonus at this point. Shit, I like the game already.
They have some adult lifestyle articles in the next game.
I will say I do miss Playboy magazine. I did subscribe to that for a long time. And the boobies were nice, but I liked the jokes. I liked the comics. I liked the interviews. It was a really solid magazine, and I miss
it. This is going to seem weird. I've never read a Playboy magazine.
Really?
Because you were too busy looking at the pictures. We know.
What? No. Oh, yeah. Well, I guess I did. I did walk myself into that one.
Yeah, you did.
I have never like held one in my hands and beheld the imagery and the words and all that stuff. It just... Never read it. Never read an issue of Guns and Ammo. Never read an issue of Playboy. That kind of thing.
Yeah, it blows me away. Playboy, do they even still make that magazine?
And I think they scrapped it last year or the year before.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's an end of the era right there. Shit. That was a history-making magazine in some cases.
I know they went non-nude for like a year, and then they went back to nude, and then they just scrapped the magazine. I think they're online only now.
I mean, it may as well. Everything else is online only. No. Probably Pirate, too. Go to Pornhub. Look up Playboy. Oh.
Hey, Reddit exists, but...
there it is.
But welcome to SML After Dark.
Know. Yeah.
Who knows? Maybe we'll be getting Waifu Editorial 3 next year.
I mean, since we are starting the recording like an hour later, I guess it technically is SML After Dark now.
Yeah, kind of.
That's right.
Anyway, this is going to be a long episode. We should probably get to the reviews.
I guess
that's... Yeah.
Y'all ready to start?
Get up on this.
Why is that not a sample?
It's going to be.
He said it. Fuck. He said it nice and isolated too, in the open air. So that's perfect.
Get up on this.
Chris Cooling. What's going on with this evening? Get up on this.
That's right.
All Joe hears in the outside is fire engines going by, and then Purnell, get up on it.
All right, let's get to reviews. We got shit to do. You ready?
Yeah.
All right, first game to talk about tonight is Raiden 4 Cross Mikado Remix, developed by Moss, published by UFO Interactive, released October 22nd for Switch in Europe for the regional equivalent of $29.99. Raiden 4, the popular shoot-em-up arcade and console game, debuts on the Switch with remixed background music by a superb lineup of artists produced by Game Center Mikado. Chris, tell us about this one.
Heck yeah. So, right. Well, I say it Raiden. I actually don't know what the official pronounce is. So it
doesn't matter. Raiden.
Raiden, yeah.
Flip a coin.
I think because Raiden is like Raiden in Mortal Kombat. So, you know, right. Yeah.
Potato.
Yeah. We can't, what is it? Contradict Chris Lambert. So let's call it Raiden. Okay. So, yeah. Raiden 4. This is a basically like a sort of ultimate edition of a game that has been released and re-released since about 2007. Of course, we're up to Raiden 5 now. Raiden 5 is available on PS4 and Switch. I know I bought it on one and I think reviewed it on the other. It's a top-down shooter or shoot-em-up or STG if you're fancy. And it has a couple of like pretty cool features, but like ultimately, the whole series, it's a series that goes all the way back, and it was kind of like, it was a nice, you know, like when top-down shooters were starting to get a little bit more sophisticated, like beyond your Space Invaders and whatnot, Raiden was like kind of like noteworthy for being like more sci-fi than like military, because, you know, Capcom had like 1942, and you had like all your you know, military airplane shooters and stuff. And then this one comes out and they're just like, nah, you get to go into space and in your fighter jets. So that's cool. Yeah. So that's a brief overview of like how of, you know, what Raiden is. And the fourth chapter came out in arcades in 2007, and then it was a Xbox 360, I believe, exclusive in 2008. And I'm going to divert a little bit into a personal story about this game. I was just discovering top-down shooters around 2008, right? I was getting really into them. And although I didn't have my own 360, I had, you know, I was living with somebody that did. And so when this came out, I was like, oh boy, it's a new Raiden game. I'm going to play it. I had played Raiden Trod on the Super Nintendo, which was a kind of bad port of the first game. And so I picked it up. It was $39.99, I remember distinctly. And this was the first time in my entire, I want to say childhood, but I was 26 at the time. The first time in my mid-20s childhood that I ran across DLC, like, just right in your face. Because right in your face, what did I do?
Hanging up now.
We're hip to you, fella.
So buy it. anyways, so I pop in this $40 game and I get to play through it. I'm like, oh, this is pretty cool. You get your one ship, but it has a ship selection screen where it has two other ships blocked off. And I'm like, oh, I get to unlock some more ships just like in this other game. And no, you had to like go online and pay more money to unlock anything but the default ship. And I was so mad that I played through a few levels, and then I just like didn't anymore. I was like, I'm not buying no DLC. I'm super mad about this. And you know, that is a stark contrast to the Chris Taylor what just downloaded Darius Burst and all the DLC just a couple of weeks ago. So, I, you know, times have changed and so have attitudes, but that was my history with Raiden 4. I played it like the one time in 2008 and then put it up because I didn't like that I couldn't unlock the other ships. So I'm happy to report that in Raiden 4 X Mikado Remix, or however you pronounce, those ships are now available in Olma. So we've got our arcade mode, which is just a straight up port of the arcade game. And your ships actually, interestingly, because I never unlocked them, I never knew this. One is the Raiden ship. The other is a kind of a variation on the Raiden ship. I think it's a little slower and more powerful or something. And then the third is the fairy that is popularly a power-up in the Raiden series. And now you can actually play as the fairy. And she, you know, she's like this naked girl with, you know, what do you call it? Like strategically covered up by like long hair and whatnot. but you know, she's like a fairy critter. And she has like this really cool alternate set of like of weapons, including like you know, like laser bubbles and whatnot. So really, and she's also the fastest ship. So like, I actually really enjoy playing as that character, which is really cool. So anyway, you have the arcade mode, which has two different difficulty settings, and I really just want to read like the description of the difficulty settings. This is from the arcade, by the way, but like if you pick the original difficulty, I'm sorry, if you pick the light difficulty, which is the easier one, it says, if this is the first time you play the game, you are supposed to select this mode. You can play and enjoy 5 stages in this mode, take it easy, and make your first try. So, like, that's, I just love, you are supposed to select this mode. Anyway, and then the original is, if you are a good player, you are supposed to select this mode. You can play and enjoy all stages in this mode, not so easy, not so hard. Which is almost philosophical in its in its presentation. So that's the entire original arcade game as it is. And the scoring system on this particular Raiden is interesting because it basically, it has a risk-reward scoring system, which this is the kind of shmup that like people play for score. So score is actually kind of important. You get basically better scores if you hang out closer to the front of the screen rather than hanging back and playing defensively. So if you're able to like get right in up to the enemy's face, nah, I didn't, that pun didn't land that time. I'm trying. Anyways, I got a lot riding on this.
Christ. Jesus.
Recovery. So if you get like right up to the enemies and blast them in the face, that's worth more points than if you were to just hang back and, you know, take them out from a distance. And of course, it's got like your awesome, very like narrow power ups. Like you've got a big old wide spread shot that you can upgrade throughout the gameplay. And then you can also get this lightning bolt that's much more powerful. Or you can get the trace laser, which is, I think, a Raiden kind of signature. It's like a laser that hits an enemy and then curves in a different direction and then like kind of seeks out another enemy. And so you end up with like tying these pretty bows of like laser.
Yeah, across, I like that one.
Yeah, that's the one that people most associate with this series. And so you got that arcade mode, but then the mode that was basically introduced, I believe, with the first home port or something. Oh, no, it actually was a whole different game at some point. It was, I think, on PS3. It was Overkill mode, which it eliminates that whole getting close to the enemy's scoring system. And instead, when you defeat like a larger enemy, even though they're dead and they've stopped moving, you can keep blasting them and like basically rack up more points that you then have to collect. So again, it's, you know, risk reward where you're supposed to like, you know, you basically can either hang out with this dead enemy and like stop clearing the screen of like the smaller enemies and try to get, you know, try to kind of gamble for a better score or not, you know. And that mode also comes with two, new stages, which is, I believe, what the home port on Xbox 360 came with as well. So two additional levels from the arcade version. Whew. And then additional mode is basically the 360 version. That's the arcade version without the overkill mode, but with the extra stages. And those are like your different versions of this game that you can play. There's one more really interesting thing to note is that, of course, you have external difficulty settings, including you can move the difficulty all the way down to practice, where the enemies literally don't fire at you. You can just play through the game casually and like just kind of memorize the patterns of movement and stuff without having to worry about the bullet dance, you know. And then it goes from very easy to ultimate.
Oh, that's scary.
Yeah, it's like 8 difficulties up.
So. Oh, jeez.
But that's not the interesting thing. I mean, difficulty settings might be interesting to some people. But so the games are two-player, right? So you can have two different players playing two different ships. You can also solo any of the ships. You can do a solo one-player, solo two-player if you want a blue ship or a red ship. You know, that's up to you. But then there's double mode, and double mode is one of the most interesting things. It is to where you can play as one and two-player at the same time. So each joystick or side of the controller moves each ship, and then the shoulder buttons take care of the shooting and the bombs. So you can basically play a two-player game by yourself, which I didn't think people did. I actually have done it. But yeah, that's now fully an option in the game, so that's cool. Really cool. Yeah. So and then the thing that makes it Ex Mikado is, of course, that the on top of the original arcade soundtrack, which you can, of course, listen to if you prefer, you can toggle it into a very, very good remixed soundtrack that was done by, like, six different artists, which is odd because it's only nine tracks. But yeah, they're really good. Like, you've got, like, one of the bands is literally called Heavy Metal Raiden, so you know, oh, geez, that you know they're bringing the thunder on that one. So
it sounds like a good overall package. Yep. $30 in America, whatever the regional equivalent is in Europe, which just got the game October 22nd. What do you think of this one?
Yeah, I say this is a buy it. This is a great shmup. I mean, it's not, you know, super innovative by today's standards, but that's okay because some of us are just wanting that old fashioned experience. And yeah, I mean, bring all the shmups to Switch. I always support, like, you know, bringing as many as possible over here, and this one's no exception.
Cool. All right, we're going to keep the cross theme going with Neptunia Cross Senran Kagura Ninja Wars, developed by Idea Factory, Compile Heart, and Tamsoft, published by Idea Factory International, released October 26th on PS4 for $49.99. The Super Ninja War to decide the world's strongest school is about to begin. Purnell, tell us about this one.
So basically, this is as you mentioned, Senran Kagura and Hyperdimension Neptunia crossover game. And the way they went about doing this was by taking the actual universe as we know them and just kind of scrapping them for the sake of saying, this is a new place. And this place is called Game Ninjastry. Yeah.
Wow.
Oh my God. I still laugh when I hear it. But it's surprisingly good as a ridiculous name pun. But in this world, the Neptune characters exist in a country called Heartland, basically referring on Compile Heart, and they practice the Kompa style of ninjutsu. And there is also another country called Marvel Land, based off of Marvelous, and they practice the whatever, shoot, like something style, freaking shooter style or some crap. And that's pretty much the honeypot shinobi or the girls from Shinran Kagura. And the two classes, groups of characters are at a constant war for each other to defeat the other country and steal their share crystals. Because they did maintain that concept of, you know, shares representing the nation's power or whatever. But one day, someone changes up the war game by coming along as a third rival nation called the Steam Legion that practices the headshot style run by a character named Yo Gamer. I don't know who comes up with this shit, but that's how it plays out. And as a result of this intrusion, the two countries decide to band together to defeat the Steam Legion, which results in you being able to play an action RPG using characters from both franchises. The way this plays out is, if it's a story level, of course, you will proceed to a level off of a world map that you select. And the world map levels, they look nice, but they're not particularly complicated. It's generally corridors in like larger spaces where monsters reside. And when you come across enemies, you beat the living tar out of them. This is done through a series of pretty nice actions, I'll admit. You have your basic normal attack, generally a three-hit combo. You have projectiles in the form of ninja stars or kunai. Ninja stars are good for just, you know, like tap damage. Kunai are good for injecting or hitting, inflicting status effects on enemies, as well as minor damage. Then beyond that, you have access to some face button special attacks. Hold down one of the, I can't remember which ones, like, I think it's like L1. And in addition to that, you press one of the face buttons and you can do one of the some special attacks the character may have assigned to those buttons. Now, one thing I did like about this this system in this game is that unlike the norm where it's just use your special attacks, they have trigger effects. So you'll have an attack and said move will have, you can, after you use it, you'll have a window of time to do a second or third special attack. You can use the same one again or another one, so long as you have a stamina meter available to use it. Now, each of these different attacks, however, may have a special benefit if used within the second or third or even the first window of the trigger. So your first attack might just be do some damage. But then the second one, you will do an attack that, in addition to doing damage, you'll lower the enemy's defense. And the third one can do something where it's damage, but you also inject seal status on the enemy. So it makes a little bit of a fun mix and match on like how you want to go about selecting which special moves to do. Now, in addition to that, you can even just like switch between your backup character, because even though there's like a total of like 10 girls you can use in the game, you can carry only two into battle at a time, but you can switch between them at will. And the last, of course, super ability you can do, aside from all that, is your Shinobi super attack. No, actually, there's two things. There's the Shinobi super attack, which is, you know, the usual build up a gauge, tool smack out, and then do the two-button combo to do a crazy attack. That happens in this game, too. But as it would if it didn't exist, I'd say that's a flaw, because all these games need a freaking ultimate attack. It just wouldn't make sense otherwise. But then the last thing that I almost forgot to mention as far as combat abilities go is you actually have form changes in this game too. Form changes in the form of, think like how Kingdom Hearts did it with Sora and his like wisdom style and his combat style and whatever, where you can hold down the right bumper button. And there are four elemental styles. You can use this a certain number of times per stage. But essentially, when you use this, you can select one of the elemental styles, which will augment your combat for a good minute or two. It could be something like, you know, remove all of your defense in favor of boosting your attack or nullifying status effects, things of that nature. So you can kind of tweak it to like what you feel as though you need to do at this point in stage in the battle. Now, after a stage is done, you go back to Hub Town or whatever. A few basic things you're able to do. You can do just like go like it's like a chat section similar to how the old Neptunia games were, where you were in a town. And with these like character sprite images that will talk to you. Sometimes they'll give you items or side quests, or they're just there for flavor. You can do a weird peaches and cream mini game where you are in a towel balancing on a peach. Don't ask. Actually, you can't ask. It's a balancing mini game. Balance on the freaking peach. You can get benefits by completing them. And then the last thing that you can really do in town. Well, I keep doing that. I always say last thing, and there's two things. What is with me tonight? Second to last thing is there's like a room where you can kind of customize your character, meaning that you can either give them like a new kunai, a new shuriken, or some charms. But most importantly, there's like a bingo board sort of thing where you can inject spirit gems into it. The spirit gems gives you various effects like, you know, increased damage against yokai or, you know, increased defense against a certain thing. You know, usual stat buffs. But each gem also has a type. And if you link a multitude of certain types in a row or a column or something, you unlock bonus benefits. I always like that kind of thing in a game where it's not just a matter of just slapping gems on a board. It's also doing it in an optimal way. And you unlock more spots on the board as you progress so you can get like more combos going, which I kind of like. And then the last real last thing, not making this shit up, is there's also a, you know, sub-quest option that you unlock where you go to a shrine and Iffy and Comp are there, and it will give you the ability to take on side quests to earn rewards for money and the like. You know, so typical, you know, flow to keep you motivated to keep redoing missions over and over to boost your characters and the like. All in all, I feel like if you like either of these franchises, you're going to probably enjoy this game, if anything, because There's a lot of, there's a surprising amount of dialogue and narrative that takes place here, which means that you'll get opportunities to watch these characters interact with each other, which honestly, they have cool interactions. They are kind of naturals in dialogue. I don't feel like this was forced, if you get what I'm saying. Like sometimes it's like if it was like Lion-O merged with fucking, I don't know, Guts from Berserk, like how are we going to make this work? We'll just slip some crap. Now, this makes logical sense as to why these guys are talking in this game. And it's kind of cool to just play through. I'm not going to go so far to say that the story is like full of heart and heartfelt moments. Yeah, no, it's freaking Shinran Kagura and Neptune. But it's stupid fun in a good way. And I honestly enjoyed the dialogue interaction that the characters had. The gameplay itself, though, won't set you afire or anything like that. I mean, you've seen this fare before. But as we say a lot on this show, or at least I say a lot on this show, sometimes it's all about the theme. I mean, you've played this before, but not with this theme, this combination of characters. And I think they did a good job with that to make you want to experience it in this situation with these individuals. So in that regard, I'd say if you're a fan of either franchise, you should not be disappointed here. The only potential disappointment you could have is if you are attached to the old English voice actors, because I'm not sure if there's been like a weird stir up over there where they don't have these people anymore, but this is all subbed, no dub option. And I'm personally the type who loved the English dubs of the characters. Like Neptune used to annoy me, but she grew on me because she's fucking Neptune. and now it's like, what'd you say?
Oh, I was just going to say, one of my favorite Compile Hard Idea Factory games is Fairy Fencer F Advent Dark Force, and most of that was because the English voice acting was so good, hilarious and campy and just like perfectly suited to the game. But yeah, when I played Azur Lane Crosswave, that also had no dubbing. It was just subs, and I was sad.
Yeah, because I mean, maybe we're in the same boat here, but one of the reasons why a lot of times I was always in the sub is better than dub camp back in the day, it wasn't because it was actually better. It was because it was good for covering up bad dubs, because I never really felt the conveyance of like actual emotion and stuff in the dialogue, and I couldn't pick up on like the tone based jokes and stuff like that in the delivery. Mm-hmm. Not because it was bad, but because it's not my native language, and I'm not going to understand these things, being that it's not my native language. So I feel like it loses something there. It's not enough to really sink a game, per se, but I can say it does take a game down a few pegs. There's no getting around that for me. If you're going to have voices and you're not going to dub them, especially if we've already known what they can be like when dubbed, it hurts a little bit. But, I mean, with that said, it could be budgeting issues. It could be that the voice actors don't do the work anymore. I don't know. In which case, I don't want to use that as a means to say the game is bad, because it's far from it. It's just something I feel some people might want to know, because if they're as attached to the character voices too, they'd be disappointed to learn it after making the purchase. Yeah. So with that said, I would say, well, you were about to do the thing, so you should do the thing.
I don't even have to with you. I could just like start, say go, and just walk away. You just do it all.
I just do the dance, man. Just
do a little dance. Go start another fire.
Yeah. Jesus. Well, $50 on this one. What do you think?
I think it is a solid buy if you're a fan of the franchise. If you are uncertain or on the fence, it is a buy it more so, because it's not going to just set your life afire or anything like that. So buy it if you're a fan, because it does the job. Otherwise, hang back, wait for sale.
You said buy it for both.
Yeah, like as in like a try it. That's what I said. I said buy it if you're a fan, but if you're uncertain, wait it out a little bit. So basically try it, like get it on a sale.
Okay, try it. Okay. Sounds good.
See, I'm doing my thing.
When you re-listen to the show, you'll be like, oh, I did say buy it twice.
No, I'm going to say no. I'm going to vehemently deny everything Chris? I heard.
Chris, you were here. Did he say buy it twice?
Who? What?
Exactly. All right. Next game to talk about is Shadow Corridor, developed by Regista, published by NIS America, released October 26th on Switch for $14.99. Chased by the spirits of the cursed No Mask, you must do everything you can to escape. Set in traditional Japanese locale, Shadow Corridor provides a unique survival horror experience. Randomly generated maps filled with a variety of items make every playthrough different. Immerse yourself in the darkness, for only the determined will survive. Chris, tell us about Shadow Corridor.
okay, Shadow Corridor. Well, this is a horror game, and I tend to, like, even though I enjoy reviewing them because they're so not a genre that I normally play, like, I'm kind of a fraidy cat when it comes to these things. So I'm going to say right off the bat, this game is scary. But not it's weird. Anyway, so we'll talk about it. So this is as I understand, we have a few different flavors of, like, horror video games. So, like, some of them are these big bloody messes where you're fighting against, like, the, you know, zombie parasites or, you know, evil ghouls and whatnot. And, you know, it's just, like, blood and guts everywhere. So much violence. And, you know, you're just, like, trying to survive with, like, you know, a shotgun the size of five herbs, right? So, and, you know what I'm talking about. That's the one kind. And then there's a specific kind, and it mostly comes out of Japan. And you know, you see them in the indie horror stuff a lot. It's where it's more subtle. Like, the game is less violent. Like, it's almost PG in a sense, but the atmosphere and, like, the sound effects and things like that will just make you so stressed out and on edge that literally anything can happen and you'll jump out of your seat, right? And that's what Shadow Corridor is. So
you mentioned it being off, like, almost PG. It is only T rated.
Yeah. I'll explain that in a second. So it's a first person game, and thankfully you can invert the Y axis, so that aspect is not terrifying. You're not forced into an inferior control scheme. But anyways, I think that it's toggleable. I said it so long ago. Yes, it is. Okay. It's actually got a lot of options, which is really nice, including a brightness setting, which is so funny considering what kind of game it is. So you start off, there's no story in the game. You walk through, like, kind of a Japanese back alley, like it looks like Japan. I'm not gonna humble brag and say it's, or, you know, brag and say it's because I've been there that I can confirm that, but, you know, I was gonna say that's not even a humble brag. Yeah. But it is. And then you eventually come across, like, some weird like very peaceful kind of areas and a cat, and then you come across, like, a mirror and some things happen. There's, like, this kind of jump scare flashback. Like, this game does deal in jump scares, so even, like, when it's just, like, showing, like, a black and white flashback, it comes in and it's like whoosh and you're not expecting it, kind of thing. And you know, and that's cheap, but I don't know, some people like that. I mean, Five Nights at Freddy's made, like, $1 billion, so anyways, so, like, you eventually get warped into this kind of place where it's very dark, and the only light source is a lighter that you have in your hand that I guess never runs out of fuel. But then again, the game's not especially long, so maybe it's just, you know, been recently refilled or something. But yeah, you have, like, you basically have to navigate through these narrow corridors, just this, like, wooden kind of house with, you know, no windows or mirrors or anything. It's just, like, a bunch of corridors, and eventually you get jump scared, and there's a creepy lady with a mask on, and then, you know, she starts chasing you, and so you have to, like, basically make it to the end of the stage without getting caught. And if you get caught, you die, and then you start over. Well, in this portion, this is kind of an introduction to the gameplay, which you know, gets fully fledged later, and it depends on the difficulty that you set as well, which we'll get to in just a second. So, you know, if you get caught, you get killed, and you have to do over again until you find a mirror, and then that mirror kind of takes you to a larger place where you literally find a note on the wall that just tells you what the game is. It's just like, you know, there's things that will kill you if they find you, and you have to avoid them, and you have to find Magatama, which is these little glowy stones. You have to find five of them and make it to the exit. Now, depending on your difficulty settings, there is a baby beginner difficulty setting where if you die, it just takes you back to a checkpoint. But if you play the normal game, and by the way, this actually came out as a free game about 4 years ago on Steam. So just this part of it is, like, basically the free game. It's the first level, quote unquote. And that's the way that that game went too, is that basically if you get caught and killed, you can revive yourself by expending one of the Magatama that you found already, but then you have to go and find it again. So you have to you have to gather up all five and make it to the exit. And again, it's, you know, the stages are all, you know, basically hallways and rooms. The hallways are where you can get killed. The rooms, depending on which monster is in there, you might also get killed in. But like, there's a running type thing that you, when you never like really see it, it's very hard to actually catch it in your sights, but you know, you can hear it because it's these wooden floors and it's like going, it's like running fast towards you, and you can, the sound design is such that you can hear like directionally where something is in relation to you by how it's, you know, running, which is kind of cool. And then if the ghost lady is chasing you, you hear a bell, and the bell gets faster as it gets closer. So, and then if it gets too close, then it does a jump scare where it distorts the screen and does this scream like type sound. And then, you know, you're probably going to die, but you could maybe still survive. And then there's a few other things that they threw in there too. I'm just not going to spoil them or anything, but you can usually see, you can see screenshots of most of what the game has to offer. If you look up this game, so it's basically that you go through these paths and they're randomly generated. So that means that you're never going to know exactly where to go. But you can, there's certain consistencies, such as you find the Magatamas in rooms. Either they're going to sit on a shelf and sit there and glow, or you have to open up like a drawer or something. Some rooms have lockers, so if something comes in and breaks in looking for you, you can hide in the locker and like watch it go by, which is, you know, always a cool thing in these survival horror things. And then, yeah, it's basically, oh, you can also light candles along the way, and so you can know if you see a lit candle that you've been there before. So that's kind of cool. And there's another additional item that is also a glowing stone, but not like the one that you need. They're just like little gems, and you can place them on the floor wherever you like, and that can, you know, kind of create a breadcrumb trail if you need one. But usually the candles will do the trick. You can run for about 1.5 seconds. So the game is largely dependent on you learning how to sneak and also use distractions. There's a firecracker item that... basically, so there's a ghost little girl that will kill you, and she is friggin' creepy. Whenever you come into a room where she's at, you can hear her crying. That's how you know she's nearby. And if you throw some firecrackers, it will, like, you know, they'll start going off, and then the ghost will go over there. And usually they're guarding some kind of like Magatama or some other item that you might use, or, you know, sometimes they're straight up blocking your way. And so you got to sneak past them while they're distracted by these firecrackers, or else they'll get up and kill you. So that leads me to like getting killed and all this stuff. While the game does, like, so, you know, really what makes this game creepy is the lighting. Like, lit candles, like, look like, you know, they light about as much as a candle will light. If you're using a different item, then you're not using your, you've got a flashlight, and you've got a, well, you can get a flashlight, sorry. And then you've got your, like, you know, your lighter, but, you know, enemies can find you if you're using them. So, you know, sometimes, but they can't find you if you're standing next to a candle or something for some reason. That's just the rule of the game. So if you're hiding, you got to turn off all your light sources and stuff. And if you're using like a different item, including like a compass that can kind of show you, it kind of points in the direction of where you need to go, just vaguely, then, you know, you can't use light while you're doing that. So it's like the lighting is so like spooky, and like, again, hearing sounds, it just, and in these claustrophobic like hallways where you can't run really because you're so weak for some reason. I mean, I can't run for very long, so, you know, whatever. It's realistic in that way. I would run away from a ghost lady, though, that was chasing me with a mask. I'd find the energy, you know? Anyways, yeah, all that stuff will, like, basically stress you out. And so it takes something that, if you just look at it in screenshots, you're like, oh, this is fine. But once you, like, get into it, you're like, oh, I am dying. I'm going to have a heart attack the next time I hear a, you know, bell. And so the sound design and the lighting design is perfect. Now, having said... if you were to get a screenshot of any one of the monsters or ghosts or anything in this game, you would be like, what in the PS2 is this? They're low poly. They're very like janky. But if they're coming straight for you in this game, they will terrify the bejesus out of you. But if you look at them, again, they're just kind of dopey. There's not a single drop of blood or gore in this game. If something catches you, it just makes a splat sound and takes you to the game over screen. And you don't get to see what they do to you. You don't really hear it because it's just a generic splat sound. And it's just like the darkness consumed you. And then, again, if you're playing on easy mode, it just starts you at the last... checkpoint, and if you're playing normal mode, which is, again, the very preferred mode, then, you know, you get to sacrifice your Magatama that you found. This game is really scary, and yet it is absolutely just a PG piece of thing. It's like, there's nothing objectionable in this whole game. It's just freaking terrifying, so no, there you go.
It's $15, what do you say?
I'd say, yeah, if you're in the mood for some screamy scares, you like to be stressed out and nervous, and you know you like to throw firecrackers at little ghost children, then this is absolutely a buy it. Horror aficionados who need the blood and guts and and zombies and whatnot will look elsewhere, because this game is probably gonna it's probably not gonna land on the desensitized type. But I had a good time with it, and $15 is a good little price for it, so I'd say it's a buy it.
Cool. Yeah. All right, next up is Disciples Liberation, developed by Frema Studio, published by Calypso Media Group, released October 21st on Xbox One, Series X and S, PS4, PS5, and PC for $59.99. Disciples Liberation is a mature dark fantasy strategy RPG with turn-based combat. Liberate the land of Nevendar and uncover the endless stories hidden within this richly detailed world, where every decision has a consequence and every wrong move could be deadly. Pernell, tell us about your time with Disciples Liberation.
So, Disciples Liberation takes place in a fantasy world whose name I suck at remembering, but you control a character named, goes by the name of Avi, but she's actually Aviana, and her friend, Orion. These characters exist in this, it's a dark fantasy world, so as you can guess, they're impoverished, and they are essentially working mercenaries, just trying to make ends meet by fulfilling tasks for rich people, essentially. Game onset involves them partaking of a particular mission involving the killing of a priest. There's reasons behind this, not just because he's holy or whatever. But in the process of doing so, some events occur, which I won't spoil because, that's part of the game experience. And they end up in a completely different and unexpected place, a castle, if you will. And this castle ultimately ends up becoming a sort of safe haven slash home for them. But now you have to branch out from this castle to, well, one, make it a home for yourself, but also try to make a difference in the world around you and provide yourself safe haven from those who would come to eventually have your head. Now, it's interesting in that this game does something pretty cool, in my opinion, that I'm not used to in a lot of games like this. And that is, it is an RPG as far as the exploration goes, like typical RPG. But as you're exploring environments and the like, you will eventually come across adversaries on the world map, whether through like interactions or just straight up, they want to kick your ass. And when this happens in a battle was to occur, it transitions to a hexagonal strategy battle experience. Characters moving from here to here or there based off of who movement ranges and inflicting various attack abilities and stuff. But this game makes quite a few cool tweaks to the usual strategy RPG formula that changed it up for me a bit. And after I explain that, then I'll go into a few other details regarding, character advancements and such. So, characters that you can use in this game, like as far as like recruitable and usable units, there are your main characters. There are like companion units, which you can usually acquire through story missions and the like. And then there are recruitable units. They are just like kind of generic soldiers who you can kind of recruit in mass, which again, I'll get into a little later. On the field itself, you can pretty much move characters around or inflict attacks. But in normal tactical RPGs, this is usually doled out by like movement points or action points. But in this game, the action points themselves actually take the form of different colored crystals. So a character, let's say, could have two crystals, which means they get two actions. But their actions that they can do are dependent on the type of crystals their AP gauge has. For example, one character, their AP gauge could be a blue crystal and a red crystal. Blue implies movement. Red implies attack, which means this person can do one movement and one attack. If you decide to not do one of them, or both for that matter, and you end your turn, you get a slight healing buff, like you get energy back. So they incentivize you in a sense to not just burn out all of your AP if you don't have to. However, another character could have two yellow diamond AP points, which, and yellow refers to versatile, essentially, which means they can either move or attack with that ability. So this character suddenly becomes the best damn thing since sliced bread, because you can do all sorts of stuff with them. And it's freaking awesome that that's how they work. And now when you get to the point of wanting to do an attack, you have basic abilities, which is like your general attack, which you can just do as much as you want. But then you also have other abilities you can unlock as you progress. These abilities are like ones that you can do, such as like a healing ability or a special magic spell that has cooldowns. And of course, there's also passive abilities that a character could have, where if they're like standing next to a character or whatever, they can imbue them with other effects, like side effects, or it may be an ability that they just have in general, like, you know, always has this against, like, you know, elven creatures. They get like a special defense buff or something, willy nilly. Now, in addition to these characters and how they work, unlike a lot of other tactical games, there's another thing they added that's new to this kind of thing, which is a backline. Frontline characters are in the mix. They are trading blows with the opponents. They can die. And if they die, they go to the graveyard. And if you don't resurrect them before the end of the battle, they are dead. So, fuck.
Yay, permadeath.
Well, permadeath in this game isn't such a big deal, though, because remember, like I said before, there are the there's generic units, and then there are your companions. Companions that die, they get resurrected at the end of the battle with like a 15% of their hit points, because they're your companions. They're not supposed to die, though.
No.
The other units that die, though, you can spend money at your castle, which, again, I'll talk about in a second, to get new ones. Like, they're just generics.
Meat bags.
So they're meat bags. You can always spend money to train them back up. So it's a small penalty, but not enough to make you go, fuck, reset the whole game. I lost a guy. It just means you got to spend some money. There's going to be some penalty. It's just not a game ender. Now, in addition to the frontline characters, though, there's a backline set. Backline characters cannot be hurt, but by that same token, they don't factor into your win condition. So if all your frontline guys die, you lose. It doesn't matter if you got backliners or not. They're not a part of the brawl, but they're just as important nonetheless, because backline units provide special abilities that affect everybody or somebody. It just depends on what they can do. And it works without the ability to really interrupt it. So, for example, one of my early game favorites was a character where if you put them in the back line, they gave everybody in your team 20% physical damage buffs. Just flat out, just for being there. Like, to me, that's fucking awesome.
Hell,
like,
yeah.
Why would I not want to have that? He's going to stay in the back line. Never has to go to work a day in his life. Just chill on the bench. I'm good for that. There's another guy who every round he will randomly inflict poison on a character, on an opponent. That's freaking cool. I like that. I mean, and I feel like every backline ability has some level of awesome to it. Like, they all feel like they could be useful, but you can only have three, so better make the ones, choose the right ones. But I really enjoy the combat in this game. It's a lot of freaking fun. I like the fact that
I do wish the battles were a little quicker. Some of those battles can really drag on.
I originally had that complaint, and I wouldn't say that I would turn away a faster battle. Don't get me wrong. But the thing that kind of helps alleviate it a fair bit is the conquer mechanic, which, for whatever reason, I'm able to really just exploit the hell out of. Conquering in this game implies that it's similar to like that Earthbound auto win system, where if it's not a story battle and you come across an opponent that you could clearly mud stomp, game could just, you could just conquer them. And the game will just give you the win. There's no penalty. You don't get reduced benefits or rewards. They just say, you won. Here's your experience and your loot. And if it's a story battle, you can't, because, of course, it's a story battle. But depending on how you end up playing through the game, you may well find yourself running through entire dungeons like, just conquer, 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 whatever. And that, to me, is like, it's kind of nice. And if you also want to do the battles themselves, like, you're not told you can't. You can always enter them and just do them anyway. But for me, I just want to progress, and I'm not losing anything by getting the experience points. So I was like, no, just hook it up. So I think that's a pretty cool mechanic, and it does make it so that even though the battles can feel slow sometimes, at least you're only really fighting the important battles, or the battles that Assy will pose a challenge. So I'm kind of okay with the, you know, run up, I'm going to stab you. You mess with Avi, you mess with me. That's my favorite line. I love when he says that. No matter how many times he says it, I like when he says it. Another thing I like about this game, though, is outside of the combat and all that good stuff, there's also like your castle management, which involves the means of like constructing new facilities within your castle and keeping in touch with your companions that you do meet and exchanging words with them and forming bonds. Now, when you build new facilities in this game, they allow you to do a variety of things, such as, like, you know, shopping, allow you to recruit new units, and give you general perks. Now, there's something interesting about this game that I think is pretty cool. Usually in games that give you character choice or the ability to have, like, let's say, social bar gauges, it may usually involve just basic things like the ending of your game or some dialogue options. But in this game, it's pretty freaking weighty. When you deal with characters in the game, there are four different factions, and the choices you make in these interactions will affect your relationship with these factions. And sometimes it's not so great. Like, you might come across a quest that clearly seems like it's in the wrong. Like, you morally don't want to do it. And by saying no, you will negatively impact your relationship with an environment, like, say, the Empire. But by losing the relationship with the Empire, you can't build certain character units that are associated with, you can't recruit character units that are associated with the Empire because you don't have a good relationship with them. Which means if you go by your heart and your gut, you are not going to be able to recruit certain characters sometimes. By that same token, though, if you're the type of player who just goes along and just accepts every mission they find on the map, like, you know, like, just character, and he sees it, say, hey, I need you to really go and take this dragon egg back to Grenamore or whatever the fuck country I just made up. If you do that, then you likely will screw yourself out of the elven relationship because the elves don't want you taking eggs anywhere. But this guy makes it sound like it's a great idea because he'll pay you to do it, right? So you got to decide what's more important, the Empire or the elves, and the types of units they can provide you with and the types of buildings you'll be able to construct with these guys. So you'll be weighing options in this game. There'll be legitimate option choices that you'll be making, and it won't just be these blind things. You'll be actually making good choices that will affect your game. I like it. I like this game a lot. I was surprised I would like it, and the best part about it was I never heard of it until the review code came through. I love when that happens. This is
good. This one's kind of flying under the radar. It's cool to see that you enjoyed it, though.
Yeah, this is a legit title. I like it. I like the character interaction. I like the voice work. The voices are really good in this game. We were just talking about that earlier with the Shinran Kagura. Voice work does a great job of conveying the relationship between the characters and interactions. I have no gripes with this game for the most part. I do agree that I wouldn't mind the battles being a bit faster, but that goes without saying for me in some respects because I'm getting old and yeah. I don't have a lot of time left. I need all, give me all the speed. The
chop, chop. We got to get shit moving.
Let's get snappy. Teleport the characters across the fucking map. I don't give a damn. But it's genuinely a good game. And also, I need to admit this, too. Like, we were talking about, like, you know, speed and all. One thing I like about this, too, is a lot of times when you play games that give you access to a lot of different units, you find yourself getting muddied in the situation where you get to equip every unit with a bunch of gear. Phoenix Point had this problem, to be honest, where, like, you want to play and you want to engage, but you got to make sure that every single unit has the right equipment, and it just bogs you fucking down. This game does a great job of alleviating that problem because while Aviana, the main character, can be equipped with all sorts of gear, like, you know, weapons, pants, shirts, or armor, you know, emotional shards, all that stuff. Companions can only be equipped with a weapon and an emotional shard, which are basically like just buff items. And general units, nothing. They running around naked. And that's perfectly fine with me. They live and die solely by their actual abilities that they earn by leveling up and just by being what they are. Beyond that, yeah, whatever. Like, I mean, that's it's the thing about it. Like, if you think about it, somebody might hear this and go, but I want to customize all my units. And they make games for that. But at the same time, I just want to play a game sometimes where it's like, I just want to bring the unit in, maybe give it an emotional shard, because that's what the normal units can get. They can get emotional shards. Just like a slight perk that makes them a little different. But I'd rather equip a unit with one item than have to equip each unit with 5 to 10 items. And I just want to deal with it. I don't feel like it. I just want to play the game. And this does a great job of streamlining, getting you into the battles and getting out of the menus. And I say this as a guy that does enjoy min-maxing, just not min-maxing it to such a degree, you know? So I'll stop rambling.
I just want to appreciate the fact that in chat they're saying that they heard you say emotional shart instead of shard.
We're going to call it that. Equip your character with emotional sharts.
Yeah. Doc Havoc, ask him to elaborate on the emotional sharts.
Never ever go deep to a down party.
When you feel special and you let one rip, there's a sprinkle of magic inside.
but appreciate it from a distance. You gotta wash that shit out.
Spritz of glory. $60 on Disciples Liberation. What are you thinking?
I wholeheartedly find this is a solid buy. This is a good game that I really would like to see get more attention. Because again, like we both said, I hadn't heard about it until it came through here. And there's a lot of games popping up. I feel like this is a game that should not get lost in the muck. It deserves a space. It deserves some face time.
Cool. Sounds good. All right. Next game is Bloodsucker Anti-Terror Squad, developed by The Mix Games, published by the Media Indie Exchange, released October 20th on Xbox One, Switch, PS4, and PS5 for $9.99. A fast and frantic arcade extravaganza with tons of action and gallons of blood. It's up to Count Bloodvein and his vampire powers to rescue his Bats teammates from Scorpion Supreme and Sting's evil clutches. Chris, tell us about BATS, Bloodsucker Anti-Terror Squad.
Well, for one, that title... I'll make sure I wasn't muted. Okay. For one, the title is longer than the game itself, so that's something. But no, we'll get to that. So, yes, BATS, which I'm going to call it, is a action platformer where you play as a vampire who is not Dracula. He's kind of like Dracula, but, you know. And you're basically, yeah, trying to fight terrorists, quote-unquote, in a very generic kind of, you know, just... They're called the Scorpion Army, and I think they're called something. But, you know, Scorpion Supreme is very much like a G.I. Joe kind of parody. So, you know, everybody's got, like, masks, and they're like kind of, you know, fascist military type dudes. But anyways, so yeah, this is a platformer and kind of a beat 'em up. And so your vampire dude is all about punching and literally ripping the heads off of enemies. That's actually a move. If you push down an attack and you have blood in your blood gauge, you can just pull that head right off and then use it as a projectile, which is really nice. It has like a lot of cool moves like that. And the first stage is basically a tutorial every time, so you can kind of learn all of what he can do. And like I said, there is a blood gauge. So every time you defeat an enemy, a glob of blood appears that you just pick up, and that raises your gauge. And so the gauge works in a couple of ways. For one, it is the... it is what you use to actually pull off different moves. So one, as I said, the head pulling off move where he turns into a wolf and like pulls her head off. One is actually a kind of an invincibility dodge dash. So if, you know, enemies are crowding you, you can push the A button and just like, you know, really quickly, you know, dodge to the, you know, a few feet to the right or left or whatever. And that takes up a little bit of blood. But if you get it up all the way, then you kind of go into like this this berserk mode where, in the case of Count Bloodvein, he turns into a wolf, and then he can just like really he can just really go to town. It's clobbering time at that point. So that's the one way that the blood works. The other way that it works is like the rings in Sonic the Hedgehog. So if you get hit once, you lose all your blood, and you have to start over collecting it again. However, if you at least keep some blood in your gauge, you can keep getting hit. But one hit when your blood gauge is empty and you die. Now, deaths are not super, like, this is a fast-moving platformer, as they say. So death's not super, it's not even death. He just turns into bats and flies away. But, like, it's not super consequential because there's plenty of checkpoints in each of the five stages of the game. So that's why I said it was short. You know, there's only five stages.
Wow.
Yeah. But they're pretty lengthy and, like I said, full of checkpoints and stuff like that, and full of challenges. It does become a challenge platformer at a certain point. You know, like lots of buzzsaws and lasers and spikes, you know, spike traps and stuff on top of the enemies. And it's funny because, like, the enemies are kind of wimpy, so it's like they almost act like they're your way to get through the other traps, because if you kill an enemy, you get a little bit of blood, and then you can take a hit, and then that allows you to get through a trap, you know, less than perfectly. So it's funny in that sense, because, you know, that's kind of how Dracula would do a platformer, right? It's like the enemies wouldn't actually mean anything to him. He'd just kill them. So, you know, it's also it's a really humorous game. The intro is absolutely worth seeing. Dracula literally calls not Dracula, Count Bloodvein literally calls the bad guy. He's like, he's such a dick. Says at some point. And also you get like this cute little Zubat type of critter that's like your emotional support cartoon character. And also it is a power up in the stage. It allows you to take one extra hit, which is kind of cool. So anyways, The other thing is that Sonic, you fight the same boss at the end of every stage. He's just got more elaborate contraptions, and it's that Scorpion Supreme dude, who's the leader of the generic terrorist army. And every time you do that, you beat a new stage, you can unlock at your choice one of the other characters in the game. Now, here's the thing. You can't just go back and replay level one and unlock a different character. You actually have to clear your data if you want, and, you know, play the whole first level again as if playing the first time in order to, like, unlock somebody different. Huh. And you only get one character unlocked per level, so you're going to play through literally 80% of the game without a full cast of characters. The fortunate thing is that they're almost identical to the main character, so it's kind of like, just pick the one you like the most and get to know them, because that's the one you're going to be playing with through most of the game. And frankly, I mean, you know, I only unlocked Mitzi, who is the Bat Lady, and she's cool, but she's a little harder to control, so I just went right back to Count Bloodvein in that one. So that's interesting. Like, the character choice is very downplayed versus everything else in this game. So it's, you know, you're not playing as a team, you're playing as a guy who is trying to rescue the team, and then the game is over. Yeah. So, but then you can play through it again with different modes and stuff like that. And there's also a built-in speedrun mode where it puts a nice big colorful timer right there, and you can try and beat your best times, which is pretty cool. Yeah. And that's also a way to start a level over, because, again, once you beat level one, like, for the rest of that game, you can't go back to level one. Like, it doesn't have, like, new game and continue. It's like continue or, you know, clear your data and start all over again.
Yeah, that's kind of, I wish it would let you go back and replay, but.
Yeah, that's like really my one criticism of the game, because honestly, it's well built, it's fun, it's challenging, it's not super annoying in terms of like constant deaths, because you at least get that one hit if you can find an enemy, so
yeah.
I consider that fair. The sprite work is amazing, and the music's really good too. I very much like the whole package this game is under. You know, I just wish that maybe you could replay stages to unlock the rest of the characters, so you could play through the game with like your favorite one. I think that would be nice. But honestly, it doesn't take away too much from the game. It's just for what it is, it's certainly a quality package.
Well, then for $10, what's your verdict?
yeah, you can go ahead and get this one to $10, especially now, like getting close to Halloween, because it's goofy fun like that. Also, interestingly, this doesn't really factor into the review, but blood is bright pink in this game. It's not actually red. And so, and some enemies, like, they get killed by the levels as much as you do. So they'll wander into spikes or get sawed in half by, like, a buzzsaw or something like that. And they, yeah, the deaths actually for the enemies is really goofy. It reminded me of this game called General Chaos on the Genesis, which was like a real-time strategy, but it was so fun to watch the different ways that these cartoony sprite characters would get, like, eviscerated. And in this one, it's like, you know, they turn into skeletons in, like, funny ways sometimes, and, like, they just look like they're filled with bubble gum. So it's...
Oh, jeez.
Like, it even has that elasticity kind of thing. So it's kind of like... It's such a goofy derp of a game, and I love it for that. So, yeah, it's good.
Cool. All right, next up is Ever Tried, developed by Lunik Games, published by Dangan Entertainment, released October 21st on Xbox One, Switch, PS4, and PC for $19.99. Ever Tried is an isometric tactical roguelite set in the afterlife where the player ascends a mysterious tower by defeating enemies in turn-based combat. Each floor presents a unique challenge to overcome through wit, strategy, and positioning. Make clever use of attacks, movement, skills, and hazards to clear floors of enemies and advance higher towards your destiny. Purnell, tell us about Ever Tried.
So Ever Tried is a game where you play as this little, I guess, what color is he exactly? I guess he's not really a color. He's just a dude with a sight. Really nifty little guy who has recently died. And my best guess is I'd call it like a form of like purgatory. He's in between that this world's version of like heaven and hell. And his goal is to ascend this tower that exists within the purgatory. And if he can reach the top, he can pretty much ascend. But if he dies, of course, being that this is a roguelike type game, he just goes to the bottom and he has to try again. Also, he has no memory of who he is. He got squeezed in amnesia. But what is the gameplay exactly? Because the narrative is pretty much exactly what I described. There's not a whole lot more going on here, aside from the occasional exposition that comes from a character, the characters that you might come across in your tower ascending adventure. However, what is the Tower Ascension like? What does it play like? And what the answer to that is like, it's a really, in my opinion anyway, it's a pretty cool spatial reasoning puzzle. Like, as a guy who plays lots of board games that involve spatial reasoning, this is right up my damn alley. The idea is that you're on a grid. Every level is about a 7x7 grid. And each, as you play through this thing, your goal is to kill every enemy that exists on that floor. And when you complete every kill every enemy on that floor, you will ascend to the next level. That's simple, essentially. But it's the way you go about it that matters. It's like a roguelike, like Sheer and the Wanderer, in that every time you take a step, the enemies on the floor will also take a step. Now, when this happens, if an enemy generally appears next to you, they can attack you if they are pretty much next to you, like at the right time. But if you are next to them and you want to do an attack, you just pretty much walk up to the other tile that they're on and your character will swing his scythe. If an enemy hits you 3 times, however, you will lose. You can take single step movements or you can take a dash movement, which is moving 2 tiles instead of 1. This sounds easy, sort of, but the game has a way of hitting you with enemies that move in ways that you have to time out and predict. Like, you might have an enemy that will blow up after you hit him. So once you hit him, you got to get out of the way. You have an enemy that he will only move every other turn. So you have to plan out when to actually walk up against him. And you can't actually say, like, skip a turn. Because, you know, some games like this, you'll be like, well, I'm just going to wait a turn until the enemy shows up near me. No waiting a turn. Every turn, you have to make a move, which will come back to bite you on more than one occasion. So the funny thing about all of this, though, is that you might also be thinking to yourself, well, I'll just take my time and plan out my moves and be smart about it. No big deal, right? Well, that is a possible thing to do, except for the fact that this game also has a sort of combo/focus meter. Focus meter is a gauge that determines how much currency you earn when you kill enemies, currency which then can be used to shop at stores on certain floors. The focus meter doesn't give a crap about how fast you want to move. It's going to drain when it feels like draining, which means while you yourself might want to take methodical steps to make good movement decisions, focus gauge on occasion, if you're the greedy type, will probably force your hand to move faster than you would like, which will probably get you killed sometimes. Every couple of floors, however, you'll come across a shop. And the shop will sell one of two different types of benefits for you. There are modifiers. Modifiers are essentially things that, just by having them, things will occur. For example, you might have a modifier that, upon reaching a floor, an enemy will take double damage from you on that floor. You might find one where, you know, basically it augments your dash. And then there's also skills which you can trigger at will based off of the shards that you acquire. And those things you have to activate yourself. My favorite being one where you drop a cross on the ground and lets you heal yourself by walking through it for three turns. Now, that it ties back into the original thing I mentioned earlier about the focus and why you kind of get pressured into doing stuff, because the focus is also how you do those special skills. So the more focus you got, the more shards you collect, and the more shards you collect, the more special skills you can trigger. So
more shards wins the you game. Collect.
God damn, this is going to become the running joke, isn't it? What else is? Like, this is the East Coast dialect. They say sharps over there. We reckon to say sharps.
Hey, chat ruined it for me, so.
Thanks, chat. But, like, yes, shards can be used to purchase things, but then the charge gauge can be used to trigger your skills. So you'll be busting your ass to maintain focus, to kill enemies quicker. Busting your ass with them sharks to acquire get more shards to unlock new stuff at the shop and unlock more focus energy to use skills. It's an interesting dance and balance effect that players will be engaged with and forced to use in order to progress as high as possible in this game. Now, it's interesting how this game works, because early on, it's not too hard, I feel. But every 10th floor, you fight a boss. The bosses themselves can be pretty intricate. And they will make you work to learn how they function and how you need to move around to kill them. And they can wreck your freaking day. And that's not even the thing I'm referring to. That's actually hard. If anything, what's hard is once you go to a new section, because the sections themselves are radically different from each other. Every 10 floors you enter and beat a boss, you enter a new environment, which has new perils, new enemies, and new challenges. Suddenly, your slow and steady methodical movement in the ice world won't mean crap in the fire world, where floors will shatter and collapse on you and enemies explode next to you. Everything's more frantic there. Ugh. But try again. Every time you die, you drop to the ground floor and you try again. And that is both one of the best and also unfortunate aspects of this game. Because a lot of times, and this will mainly depend on the player, but I feel like it's still worth noting, is that there's no, like, it doesn't feel so random. Like, a lot of the ways that roguelikes like to get away from the idea that you're repeating the same areas every time you die is they randomize it in a way where you feel like you're getting a lot of new content or new experiences on each run. But due to the fact that it's always a 7x7 grid, and the enemy variety in each section isn't particularly complicated. It's usually three to four enemy types per zone, not including the actual trap types that are there. You could find yourself in a situation where you're like, I've kind of done this enough. I'm tired, especially on the earlier sections, the ones you'll be doing the most over and over again. You could find yourself feeling like, I'm kind of burned out on these things, which kind of is annoying. But at the same time, if you don't overplay this game to exhaustion, which makes this a great candidate for, like, play a round or two, put it down, come back, play a round or two, put it down, you still can find yourself feeling fresh to the challenge. Like, I want to give this another go. Maybe this time will be different. Because it's genuinely the enemy variety and quantity of skills that does the most harm for this honestly, genuinely quality game. Otherwise, it would be nice if Dongan could get a hold of, like, if they could get the original developer to, like, released maybe some patches or updates, like, here's a few new things, or maybe even like a floor randomizer, like, you don't always have to start in the snow. Maybe floor two can be the fire region. It could be. But stuff like that, I feel like, would help increase the ability for this game to have longevity. Another thing that would help it for longevity is a lot of games, I think Gungeon's really noted for this, is that they also know you'll be repeating the same areas over and over again. But one way they get around the tedium is they have multiple bosses that could exist on one zone. So you get to the end of the zone, and it might not be, you know, the Werebeast. This time, it could be the Frost Giant, because they all can come up in that area of the game. This game can stand and have something like that for each four, every 10-zone boss. Like, maybe make two or three of them instead of just the one. That way, I feel like I can anticipate something, look forward to something still, ascending the same zone I've already been through. But hearing the criticisms I gave, don't take this to mean that I dislike this game. I think the game is actually genuinely still fun. But like I said before, I am also a huge sucker for spatial reasoning. I like being like, if I dash over there instead of walking over there, is that the optimal play to put this guy in the same place that I'm going to be standing next to on that turn so I can stab with my damn sight? I don't know. I guess I'll try. I like those things. And this game has that gameplay mechanic in spades, especially when they throw a lot of mechanics at you that will screw with you and freak you out. So with that in mind, if it were just me and the other issues I had in mind were not really issues, I'd give this a buy. But due to the fact that I feel like some might have issues with the variety and longevity of the game, what is this game being sold for?
$20. So what is your verdict at $20?
I'm going to give this a try in that sense. If money's no object, though, then fucking buy it, because you can play it for like an hour and feel like you got your money's worth. But general consumer, I'd give it a buy it, because I feel like this game could use a little bit more content in it. But for what it is still a fun time. Just know that coming in, you might find yourself bored before you reach the top of the tower. Not bored, but so much as but burned out on the concept before you reach the top of the tower.
So is it a buy it or a try it? Because you said buy it twice again.
No, I didn't.
You did. I swear to God, you said. Otherwise, it's a buy it.
Yeah, that's what it was. There was
context. You're like, it's a buy it if you have the money. Otherwise, it's a buy it because it doesn't really have the content.
No, I said it's a buy if money is no object to you, because you could likely get out of playing it for an hour and feel like you got your money's worth. But otherwise, it would be a try it.
There you go.
Because sharks. It would be a
You're going to listen to this episode. You are. You're going to listen to it. I'm going to make you listen to it. And you're going to be like, son of a bitch, twice. I said buy it twice.
God damn it, Pernell. What are you doing to yourself?
What are you doing, Pernell? You only have three reviews and you're fucking up two of them.
I blame the alcohol. I'm so
drunk. You drunk bastard.
So drunk.
Oh, but God. Yes,
definitely a try for this game at the least, because it is a cool concept and it's fun to play.
Cool.
I'm just concerned about people getting burned out on it.
If you could get into it, I'm having a really hard time with it. The whole spatial logic reasoning, and it's just it's not clicking with me the way I hoped it would, but I'm gonna keep trying it.
You keep at it, because I mean, honestly, for me, aside from that one healing skill, a lot of the time I was like, I don't even like using the skills. I'm covered, baby. I know what I'm doing, because I get so obsessed with just, if I move here, he's going to probably move there. In which case, that means the laser is going to fire there, so I can move here. Like, I run the numbers. It's a lot of fun for me. And it once it clicks, it clicks. And then you reach another zone, and you're like, fuck. I gotta relearn the game, because they changed it up on me here. I can't walk backwards now, all of a sudden.
Oh, God. All right, well, we got one final game to talk about with you guys that is called Hymno, the Silent Melody, developed by David Morlejo Sanchez, published by Grab the Games, released October 20th on Steam for $11.99. Hymno, the Silent Melody is an atmospheric roguelite RPG. Use resources gathered from different environments, create your unique arsenal and base, and remove corruption from the silent world without corrupting yourself. Chris, tell us about Hymno, the Silent Melody.
All right, well, this is a kind of a follow-up to, I think it was there was a game that was just called Hymno that I reviewed prior, and I don't know where I reviewed it. I think, on this podcast, yes, but I think maybe PS4, because I can't find it in my Steam or my Windows, so I don't know.
Not too sure.
But, say what?
I said not too sure. I'm too dumb to remember.
Yeah, so this is a... this is an early access kind of follow up to that. And Hymno was marketed itself as a relaxing Metroidvania type of platformer, basically. And this is like that. It's got some more things going for it, and it's a little confusing, but so you know, full disclosure, just today, like as of this recording, they released an update that actually has the game explain what it is. Because when I started playing this, it doesn't tell you anything. It just kind of lets you go and figure it out yourself. And then just today it came out with a thing where it's like, okay, now the game will actually, you know, this one character that's at the beginning of the game in the hub will actually explain what you're supposed to do. And so what you're supposed to do is, so this is like an 8-bit style platformer, but, you know, it's got like the modern lighting effects and like really fast, really smooth animation. Actually, it's a real joy to play. It's very, very like responsive. And wall jumps aplenty, and like you can do like boosts into wall jumps and like cool stuff like that. So it's a very acrobatic game. You basically play as the character. I'm gonna assume his name is Himno. I like to call him Himbo. But funny enough, I wrote that joke and then I saw that joke in another review and I was like, damn it, I shouldn't do that joke. And I was like, you know what? F that review. Because I'm gonna call it that too. Anyways. So I'm calling out myself, and I'm also calling out the person who thought of the joke first.
That's terrible.
Yeah. So he's a little dude with a big green sword on his back, and as you know, as opposed to the prior game, this one actually features combat. There's actually enemies in it, so it's still relaxing because those enemies aren't particularly hard, but you do actually have to fight things, and it's interesting because you basically kind of aim at them, and with the right shoulder button, if you're playing, there's a mouse and keyboard way of playing this game that I didn't even touch. I'm sorry to, I can't stand keyboard and mouse because it hurts my back. So I played this with a controller and
I am the same button, way. So
yeah, the shoulder button will basically jab the sword out in a direction, but it's more like kind of shooting a short distance laser. Hard to describe, but it really works really well. And so you take down enemies with their like life bars and stuff like that. You start off in a hub, which is just this wrecked castle, and you teleport into these different worlds with different levels. And each of those stages has a boss that once you defeat it, it says corruption has decreased in this area. And then you can open up like the treasure chest that's in there also elsewhere. Now, there's also other hidden treasures and things to collect in these stages, but they might require, let's say, a key. So how do you get a key? You actually build one. In your menu, there is basically a crafting station, and it kind of automatically populates based on what you have in your inventory, like what items you can create. And it's everything from like weapons to other items to like keys and like things to help you progress through the game. And ultimately, you're supposed to like gather up as many resources as you can, because eventually those are going to lead into building, kind of rebuilding the hub castle and introducing like new parts to it. And, you know, that kind of unlocks new things. I haven't built up too much of it yet, so I'm not exactly sure what those things are, but that's the point of the game as explained literally starting today. Cause I was going through the stages and beating the bosses and gathering the stuff and building like weapons and, you know, bows and arrows and stuff. Oh, there's other weapons such as bows and arrows, which are, you know, it's just a projectile that shoots like the laser sword, but all the way. And then there's also spells, which I never really got around to, but you craft them by just crafting a book, which I just imagine the guy sitting there with his anvil, just like pounding on a book until it's magical, which is what I love about these kind of games. So yeah, the whole point of it is to basically build up your hub castle to some goal that is never stated, but that's what it is. It's fairly simple, it's straightforward, and it is actually relaxing because it's, like I said, it's smooth and fast, really nice to play. The music is extremely chill. It's like somebody took a synthwave track, took out the beat, and then slowed it down like 8 times. It's just like these synths that slowly swim into your headphones like a whale, and eventually they just like, these notes just become really bassy and like, you know, I don't know. It's like kind of relaxing in a sense, but it's kind of like Inception, right? Where every time they go deeper into somebody's dream, like the music slows down even more until it's just like a cello running at like, you know, I don't know, like 8 times like slower than normal. Anybody watch movies in here? Well, anyways, that's like what it reminded me of. It's just like this really slow, one note at a time type of soundtrack that is actually pretty effective. I quite enjoyed that. So, yeah.
Cool. The game is in early access right now. They are planning to have it in early access for about a year. No definitive plans, but it is likely that the price will increase after early access period. Right now it's $11.99. Is it worth jumping in now? What do you think of this one?
I think, yeah, actually, I was going to give it a try it because of the lack of clear instruction and the fact that it just seemed kind of aimless. But like I said, as of today, like the game actually explains what you're supposed to do and like, and is it, it just has enough narrative at the moment where it's cohesive and, you know, actually intriguing. So I'm going to give it a buy it today.
Cool.
As of today. So go ahead and get into this. And like I said, the quality of the aesthetics and like the level design and the controls and stuff, it's all there. Like that builds to me a lot of trust that the ultimately finished product is going to be something of an indie darling once it's fully ready to go. But right now it's a good romp.
So cool. Go for Sounds it. Good. Yeah. All right, well, that is it for you two. Gonna let you two get going. I got Tim coming on and then our buddy Glenn Case coming on. So do either of you have any final words?
I got sharting to do, so.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
Hey, that, at least this time I intended to say it.
This shard is on fire.
Oh, mercy. This is After Dark, folks.
All right, moving on. We got Tim Ekibis joining us. Tim, how are you doing?
Man, it's been a while since it's been just me doing a side recording.
Right? Yeah, yeah. You're not in the party cast. It was just me, Chris, and Tim. Or no, me, Chris, and Purnell. You're Tim. It's been a long day. It has been a long, long week. Kidney stones Tuesday. Suck.
Yeah, every day is a long period of agony.
Yeah.
Yeah. I got my third COVID shot on Sunday, and then Monday I felt like garbage, and today I was just kind of tired, and my arm is sore and really swollen in the spot where I got the shot, but it's dissipating. So you're
getting boosters now?
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. Where have you been, man? Yeah, of course you. Well, some people are eligible for boosters.
Yeah, I'm not yet.
Yeah, yeah, because you either have to be vulnerable or work in a vulnerable place. However, the best news is that kids might be able to start getting them as soon as next week.
Yay!
And it'll be a big surprise for my kid because I will freaking, the day he can get a shot, I will pick his ass up from school. The end of the day and take him directly to the pharmacy to get a stuck in the arm. And he's excited. So he's not a little bitch.
Yeah. You little bitch kids out there.
No, I'm not. I mean, the kids just now are getting their opportunity to get the shot. It's the adults that are little bitches that haven't gotten a shot.
Yeah. There are a lot of bitch adults out there.
Too many. Too many.
Way too many.
Unfortunately.
Yeah. Anyway, you got a game to talk about. Should we get to this?
I do. I have a game to talk about.
Yep, just one this week.
Just one.
All right, next game to talk about is Jars, developed and published by Daedalic Entertainment and released October 20th on the Switch for $14.99. Jars is a strategy game featuring puzzles and elements of tower defense. Break all the jars and protect the sarcophagus. Tim, tell us about Jars.
I don't know why I'm just wanted to suddenly look at like what other things this company has produced. Not important for this. Anyways, it's Jars. So Jars is a creepy little fucking game, you little creepy developers. It's a creepy looking game that it's a strategy game that incorporates elements of tower defense. It is my nearest touchstone that people might be familiar with is Plants versus Zombies, which is tower defense literally. But so the game has a, as I mentioned, it has a kind of creepy aesthetic. And that, okay, so you're this kid in this house, and being sent up into the attic for alleged bad doings. So these stages kind of take place in a, you know, like a creepy attic area is the idea. But anything, the stages that are presented to you are shelves, basically, and they are multi-leveled areas. And everything in the game is like creepy, crawly, weird. Your units that you're putting down are mostly bugs. The enemies that are coming at you are sometimes also bugs, but like there's these big, like nasty looking rats, which are kind of one of the standard foot soldiers, but there's other, you know, dung beetles and spiders and just a variety of creepy crawly things.
A cavalcade of vermin.
Yeah, and the game has kind of this a very muted, like kind of beige color palette, and so it looks just weird and creepy, and dark color tones and just muted colors all around. It's not a colorful game. It is much more flat with its colors and its creepies and crawlies. So you have you go into a stage. You go into a level, and there will be the eponymous jars kind of laid out on these shelves. And there are some jars that you have to protect. And then the other jars could take a variety of forms. Some are unmarked and could have anything in them. Some are clearly marked enemies, and some are clearly marked, you know, friendly. So your first thing that you need to do in a level is start pointing and clicking and cracking open jars to get stuff. The fun twist is that it leans heavily on those unidentified jars. You just don't know what's going to come out of them. And it also randomizes the level layouts like a little bit. Like if you fail and have to try again, so it won't be it doesn't put the exact same things in the exact same mystery jars, which is, you know, a hoot. It is a true mystery every single time. But, anyways, so a jar could let loose an enemy, which will start moving towards your chest that you need to protect. It could include a minion, or it could include a special item. So you can have up to three minions at a time equipped for a stage. As the game goes on, you will gain the ability to unlock new minions. It's one of those things where it's like, hey, we've unlocked this in a shop for you to buy. And it's like, man, come on now.
As long as it's not real money, I'm happy.
It's not real money. No, it is not that. But, so you'll kind of have your loadout of three units that you may find within these jars. And then you can select one and place it about the stage. And different units will have different properties and different movement or lack of movement. Some are just kind of stationary defensive units. Some will patrol an area, some will move up and down, just kind of at will. Otherwise, you know, the characters have to take ladders. The items that you can find will take the form of, and they have variety effects, but it's, you know, it's like you find darts, which you can use just to like target and throw at an enemy. Like if an enemy defeats one of your minions right before it gets to the chest and you just need to finish it off, you just whip a dart at the sucker and finish it off if you have darts available. There's like glue, which will slow down minions within a certain radius on the screen. Stuff like that can be layered in to your strategic play, depending on how a level goes. So the game is broken up by different worlds, which have different backdrops. And each world will kind of have, by world, I mean, it's like the stairs, the attic itself, the kitchen, whatever. It's just places around your house. It's not like you're going to fucking Mars. but yeah, each level will have a series of, or each world will have a series of levels to it. You clear the levels, you gain currency, you move on to the next level. Or the next world. You gain with the currency, you can unlock units. You will also unlock power-ups for your unit. So each unit will have a these slots that are literally different shapes. So you can assign them what I'll call badges, so long as the badge fits that shape, which will give them different properties like increasing their attack speed, move speed, health, stuff like that, etc. So that's like another layer there on the strategy as you prep for battle. My only kind of knock on this game is that playing it with a controller was definitely a bit clunky at times. You'll use a button to select a unit, and then you press Y to select a unit, but you have to use the triggers to select the unit first. And it ends up being a lot of having to kind of look down at the bottom of the screen to see what you have selected, then pressing Y to select the unit you want, and then picking the space where you want to put the unit, and then pressing A to actually put the thing down. It's, about as intuitive as I guess it could be, but it doesn't feel great. The game does have touch controls.
So if you're playing
portable, you just kind of drag and drop, and it's easier, and that seems kind of a better way to play the game rather than playing it on a TV. But you can play it on a TV if you want. It's just clunkier. There's five worlds that have, at least a dozen, many more than a dozen stages a piece. So there's a good amount of content here. There's a good amount of variety. It has a good, weird look to it. It's fun, has a good progression to it. It's very solid all around.
Cool. So $15 on this one. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, it's definitely worth it. If this is the type of thing you're looking to get into, there on the Switch, might be a little cheaper on Steam, but it is a worthwhile, game in that genre.
You don't get portability on Steam.
You don't? Well, not yet.
Not yet. Not yet. Oh, man. All right. Well, that is it for you. I guess we'll let you get going. We got one more review to take care of with our buddy Glenn. So we'll let you get going. Do you have any final words?
No final thoughts this week.
Nothing.
That's it,
All right. And final game to talk about tonight. We are bringing in our good friend Glenn Case. Glenn, how are you doing?
I'm getting over COVID at this point. I'm feeling better. How about yourself?
I'm doing all right. I didn't have COVID, so I mean
that's a plus. I mean, if you've got to have something, make it not COVID.
Yeah, I mean, why not, right?
Yeah, at this point, I mostly just have a nasty cough every now and then, and I'm feel even more out of it than usual. But
I have a cough too, but that's because I smoke a lot.
You're smoking.
Not cigarettes, though, so.
Oh, got it.
Yeah. See, I'm a weed smoker.
Ooh, see, there you go. You go and spell it out like that.
Hey, man.
Most of the people that I like and respect are also weed smokers. I did it once. Now that it's legal here, I thought, I'm going to go ahead and do that. I got one third of the way through performing a song in my backyard before I realized I was playing a song. It's like, when did I start playing this? Because my friends that are into it are real big on it, and so they brought the good stuff. My first time was really good stuff. I figure if and when I do a second time, I'm going to make sure someone is ready to record me performing songs.
That'll beautiful. Be good fun. Now I want to get high with you.
See, there you go. That's what people say, too. It's like, when and if you do that, you better invite me. I've heard that more than one time.
Go live on Facebook.
Right. There it is.
Oh, all man. Right. Anyway, you got a game to talk about. Should we get to this?
Yeah, I think we should. And it's been out for a while, but wow. I mean, it's, sometimes you come back to something and it still holds up.
Yeah, well, the final game to talk about tonight is called Moss, developed and published by Polyarc. It released February 2018 on the PlayStation VR for $29.99. I know it's on a couple of other VR platforms now as well. Moss Book 2 is coming sometime next year, probably, but hear more about it on episode 718 of the SML podcast. shameless self-promotion. In Moss, players meet Quill, a young mouse with dreams of greatness beyond the confines of her settlement. While exploring the woods, she finds a mysterious glass relic and an ancient magic is awakened. With her uncle now in grave danger, Quill must embark on an epic journey, and she needs you there by her side. Glenn, how did your journey go?
I will say that my journey is not complete yet. I've not played this to completion, but sometimes when you're playing a game, it becomes very, very obvious that you're playing a masterpiece. And so, I mean, if it comes down to it, spoiler alert, this is the cream of the crop of what a VR game should be.
Hell yeah.
I mean, to me, the mark of a great VR game is that the game should feel like the VR aspect isn't just tacked on. It should feel like it's a necessary part of things, and this passes that test with flying colors. One of the big wow surprise moments was realizing that I needed to physically lean my head in to see things more clearly. And that alone was an experience unlike anything that I've ever had in a video game. You're used to just doing this thing with platform games where you press a button to be the camera. You are the camera. Your body is the camera because you're leaning in with your body and your head. And like, oh, because I am now leaning in, I have a better view. Just like if you were there.
Yeah.
And
you're like, what's behind that stone? Let me stand up and look. And yeah. Over here, you're like, wow, there's a secret behind that stone.
Yeah, I found myself actually standing up playing because I was seated at first. I'm like, I really want to know what's up there. So just you stand, physically stand up to see it. And it's like, I can see it now. This is ridiculous. I've never experienced anything quite like this in a video game. And you start playing it like a regular platform game, thinking that, you know, wow, this is just kind of a difficult platform. I remember early on, there's these spikes, essentially, that are on, it's like plants that have like thorns on them. I'm thinking, wow, these are really difficult to jump before you realize, oh, I just need to slash through them. They can be destroyed with my sword.
Oh, yeah, I have a sword.
Yeah, it's like, oh, well, so there's that. But then there's these crab creatures that it's like, man, I'm having a hard time taking these on. And you're realizing, oh, wait a minute, you're part of the story in this case. It's not just that you are observing this. You are considered a character called the reader. And you're not only encouraged to interact with things in an incredibly charming and unique way, it's essential for you to help Quill, because Quill cannot do this on her own.
Oh, no.
You have got to be there to help her, and it's the symbiotic relationship that is, again, like nothing I've ever played in a video game personally. It's brilliant. It's a masterpiece. It's a masterclass on what developers should be doing with VR. Here, it's 3 years old. It's still incredibly special. And while I have not, admittedly, I've not played a ton of VR games, but I would not be surprised if Moss is mentioned among the best games that PlayStation VR has to offer. In fact, I'd be more surprised if it's not in that conversation.
Yeah, it usually is in the discussion of best VR games and best PSVR games. I'm honestly glad that you're getting a chance to experience this game. I know you have the PlayStation VR, and when we did the interview for Moss Book 2, I was like, you know what? I bet Glenn would really like Moss. I wonder if I could get him to review it.
Yeah, well, thank you for doing so, because this, it really, if more games are doing things like this, I could see there being an actual future with VR, where 3D, like, you know, you had 3D movies and VR and everything that have always seemed kind of touch and go. And it's like this technology that could stick around, or it could be a fly by night thing that's just here today, gone today.
Yeah.
And this is the sort of, I think, game development that needs to happen to make it viable to where it's not just tacked on. It's brilliant. I mean, I guess I'm telegraphing here, but my God, it's a resounding buy it. If you have a PlayStation VR, you need this game.
Didn't I tell you that?
Yeah, I think you probably did.
Yeah.
That sounds like something you'd say.
Well, do you have any gripes about the game that if the devs are listening to that they could address in the sequel? Do you have any advice, any feedback that you would like to pass on?
Not yet. Based on the gameplay that I've had, there have been a couple of moments where I felt stuck, and then you realized, oh, it's because I'm not considering the aspect that I am part of this. Like, you think that it's this impossible thing to get through, and you realize, oh, because I'm not putting myself in this situation. I'm just expecting Quill to do it when I need to be helping Quill. So yeah, any complaints that I had were just momentarily, and I realized, oh no, they planned for this. This is a very lovingly crafted game, and it shows. Like, they put so much effort and energy into this to make it a smooth gameplay experience, and I'm floored. It's so good. And I've had other games that I've done, VR and otherwise, where I have had feedback where it's like, this part of your game's broken, you know, and in some cases, the developers have fixed it. I've got no issues, at least thus far, that I've run across. It's just a masterpiece.
Well, I am glad you enjoyed it. I know you already said it, but let's make it official. $29.99 for Moss on PlayStation VR. What is your verdict?
If you have a PlayStation VR, you had better buy this game. It's my
God. There you go. You're getting threatening remarks from Glenn Case that, motherfucker, you better buy this game.
You're doing yourself a disservice if you don't. You are doing yourself a disservice if you do not get this game. If you have a PlayStation VR, it should be an essential one to do. It's so good. I'm not even all the way through with it yet, but I cannot wait to play more of this and potentially play the sequel when it comes out.
Well, when the sequel is on the way, we will be sure to keep everybody updated on news, and hopefully we could get the Polyart crew back on for another chat, and maybe you'll be able to join that one too.
Yeah, I'll just sit here just, you know, gushing about how great they are. That'll go real well. It'll be like that Chris Farley thing with Paul McCartney. Remember when he did that thing with the Beatles? Yeah, that was great.
Oh, man. All right. Well, that is the end of this episode. Glenn, thank you so much for coming on and hanging out for a few minutes and talking about Moss. Thanks to everyone else who came on and did their thing. Do you have any suggestions for music we could play at the end?
That is an exceptional question. This might be a little bit out of left field, but I've been digging on a jazz album from 1981 by the Jeff Lorber Project, I believe it is. L-O-R-B-E-R. Oh,
that might be copyright.
Oh, so you can't play it.
Okay, I'm talking like video game music or like your music.
Oh,
hint, hint. Well,
hint, hint. Something from me. I have so many things. I have a new album that's coming out in June. I could give you one of them from the upcoming album. Let's take a listen. I'm going to look at the list here. Which one do I feel is ready for prime time here? I'm going to suggest Look Good in Black. It's a song called Look Good in Black. Wrote it as part of January this year in 2021, but it'll be on my album coming out in June. That's going to be Happy Songs About Death.
Happy Songs About Death.
Yeah, I'll just tell you the name of the album will be Playable on Death.
Playable.
Yeah, you got the pun. That's beautiful.
Oh, God. I love it.
Yeah, no, wait till you see the cover art. I've not shared the cover art with many people yet, but it's phenomenal.
Oh, no. I'm scared.
Well, it's the same painter that did the artwork for Kiss Me Again, Kayla Watkins. She's phenomenal. And I asked her to do something fun, and she came through in spades.
Nice. Well, that will be out in June, and I'm sure we'll play some more of that when it comes out. But we are going to end the show with Look Good in Black by Glenn Case. And Glenn, do you have any final words to take it away?
Bring on the cheese.
There are jobs I try.